everybody. Welcome to episode 202 of the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. I'm Sarah, and tonight I'm joined by Def and Connor. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Hello.
Hi, Sarah. I haven't heard that voice for a little while, actually.
Yeah, I've been away. So I went to the US for the first time ever, actually.
Oh, I hadn't been before.
I'd never been before. And yeah, it was really cool. It was a mixed bag of things that happened, but I went to Texas, and one of the first.
Did you see the Spurs?
No, I did not.
That was Mitch asking, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I saw some pretty interesting things. So I think like one of the first places I went to, one of the first stores I went to, had like a wall of like different religious ornaments that you could get. There was a lot of crucifixes, and there was one that was like it was fashioned like two fake bullets overlapping, you know, like the cross is two like bullets.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, Jesus for bullets. That was, yeah, that was really funny. But you
have,
know what?
Did they have the Transformer crucifix? Have you seen that? It's like a no. crucifix that's a Transformer. It transforms into, I don't know what it transforms into, but. Yeah, so it like folds in and out.
I didn't see that. Oh, wow. You can make stuff out of it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. No. No, I didn't see anything like that. I just saw that and I was like, wow, that's amazing. That's the most Texas thing I've ever seen in my life. And then I also went to New Mexico, which was really cool. And I went up like into the Rockies. So it was really different, like, because Texas is very flat. It's very hot, desert. And then we went up there and we played a lot of board games, met some really lovely people. Yeah, so it was a really good time. Everyone was really lovely though, you know, like it's the like Southern hospitality is a real thing. So yeah, and lots of like yummy Mexican food. That was really
awesome.
Good. Do you guys like Mexican food?
Oh yeah, but I don't know if I like Mexican food, like Australian Mexican food, if that makes sense. Like covered in sour cream and cheese, if that actually counts as Mexican food or not.
But you know what? That is like the Tex-Mex style. Like there was so much cheese on everything. And I kept getting caught up because, you know, obviously like I'm trying to eat vegan. I don't want to eat cheese. And like even the beans sometimes had cheese on it. I was like, no, the beans have been contaminated. Yeah, I had to like get side dishes and put them all together because it's a very meat-based – Texas is a very meat-based diet, right? I really was not welcome there. Like they do not want vegans there, right? So I actually just had to look at the sides and go, all right, I'll have the tortillas and I'll have the guacamole and I'll have the beans. And then I was just like making my own little vegan concoction of like tacos or whatever. But it was really good. It was really nice. I had a fun time. Played lots of stuff, but I don't want to hog the microphone. What have you guys been playing lately?
I think Def should take us away because he has like a laundry list of things.
A laundry list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a weekend full of board games because my friend Harry was here for the weekend visiting, and it was jam packed with games from, you know, like. Games with the girls that we all played together, and some pretty heavy stuff that we ended up playing today. So, you know, just off the top of my head, we played Burnt Cycle, we played Lisboa, we played Five Tribes, we played Root with the girls, we played Circadian's First Light, we played Exploding Minions. Lots
is that
and
like
lots
Exploding Kittens?
That's a different version of Exploding Kittens.
Right.
We played Tolkien. We played Too Many Bones, CO2. Harry brought Concordia, which I played as well. So, yeah, lots and lots and lots of games just the past couple of days. And, a few days ago we played Tricarian together with Connor. Well, that was great fun, and I think
I was looking forward to playing that so much. Like I remember we were like, oh, we don't know if it's on Tabletop Simulator and we're kind of building ourselves up for disappointment because we hadn't really organized it before, and I'm kind of like, oh, whatever. And then Def's like, gentlemen, it's on there. And it's good. And it is. It was like a really, really good, really, really good scripting and all that type of stuff. Except for the one thing that was annoying, like the scoring tokens, because the scoring track, it snaps. So when you tried to move your token, if you didn't put it exactly on the top of the other token, like in occupying the same space, it wouldn't sit there. But that's like a very, very little thing. Oh, man, that game.
Did it live up to your expectations?
Yeah. 100%. That was like, it was so, have you played it, Sarah?
I have played it, and I was just thinking to myself, you know, the scoring token wouldn't have been a massive deal to me because I don't think I even got past 20 points. I didn't score very much. It's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard. It's
really hard.
I just wanted to get to 14 so I could get the cooler tricks. That was like, yeah. I was like, I don't care what happens now. I want to be able, I think
the, I like that you get the like recipe books and tricks. Yes. You know, that's really cool.
And you can fossick through them and so I think the one, we actually haven't finished the game to be honest, because we started a little bit later and like Def, as per usual, did an awesome job of explaining the game. And you kind of, you know, it's a mind clash game, so you have to explain everything in totality so it all makes sense. But we got to them. We said, okay, we're going to put a pause on it. And I just happened to get my like next big trick, which is catching the bullets. So I'm catching the bullets. He's catching it in his fingers, but I think I should catch it in my teeth. Like I think that's like the real the real trick. But, oh, yeah, like – and I was talking to Def about it too, how sometimes Mind Clash games have a – like a, sometimes people like they're complicated for complicated sake.
Yeah.
Which I can kind of see the argument for, but all it does is build theme because it totally makes sense, right? Like if you're a magician in what would that be, the 19th century, like early 20th century, whatever it is, like, you know, you're going to be building or collecting resources. You're going to be investigating other magicians and what they do. You're going to be hiring assistants. Like it just all really makes sense and turns into a really cool little – it just tells a cool story, I think.
Yeah, totally. I think that – I don't know if it's that for me. I don't think that Mind Clash seems complicated for but I do feel like I have a barrier there for some reason. I don't know why, but I feel like there is some kind of barrier where Mind Clash games just looks that like next level complicated and I don't know what it is. Is it the symbology? Is it?
It is. I think David Turtsy calls it the big scary wall of icons.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's it then.
Like if you've seen Anachrony, you know you know what he's talking about. And Voidfall,
it's like hieroglyphics.
Is even worse than that. But honestly, I think that the iconography in all of the Mind Clash games, as soon as you get that first sort of walkthrough of it, it just makes so much sense after that I don't have an issue with them. Like I can just pick them up very, very quickly. And from a rules perspective, they seem to be quite streamlined. Like they don't have exceptions. They don't have, you know what I mean? Like they seem to be quite streamlined and every game seems better than the previous one in that aspect. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I think it's a me problem. Was I'm great. Not saying it's their fault at all.
It's a Sarah problem,
It's definitely a Sarah problem. Yeah. So, how did the girls go when all four of you played Root?
They did well. Angie won because she played the Corvid Conspiracy. I played the Woodland Alliance. Harry played the Marquis de Cat and Marquis de Cat, and Penny played the Vagabond, and they were both extremely aggressive against both of us, so it was kind of
they usually do win, right? Like,
it was a very fun game because with four players you don't have that two versus one stomping that they usually subject me to, so it was a little bit nice for them to have a different target for a change.
Were they at least
nice for them or for you?
Or did they, like, by the time Harry had been there, was it long enough for them to be like, you're not new here anymore. Like, we're gonna take all our aggression out on you.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was – they took it out on the new person on the table, which I was like, I wasn't complaining about. I still came in last, though, so it didn't matter at the end. I still got my fair share of the aggression.
You let the Alliance down, Def. The Alliance, they're the one, like, that's the pure good in the game. They're the rebels.
How are rebels purely good? They might be bad.
No, they're not. They're the rightful owners of the woods. Everyone else has come in and taken their woods from them.
Right. No. Okay.
Well, at least in my headcanon, right.
It's the insurgent faction, right?
Yeah, that's right. And they're so fun. They're so good. Like, and everyone's on like tender hooks around you, or like or working on eggshells, because like where are they going to drop? Like they're checking like who has the most like figures, who has the most pieces, because that's probably where they're going to. Everyone's trying to get rid of your sympathy, and like, yeah, it's so good. I wish I could have jumped in them.
Connor, before, did you say tender hooks?
Yeah, I did say tender hooks.
Do you know that's actually not right? I used to say tender hooks all the time. It's tenter hooks.
No, it's not.
It is.
Rubbish. I don't believe that for a second.
Look it up. I used to get this wrong all the time, and then I was like, oh, what? That's a thing? It's a thing. I'm going to look it up.
Tenter hooks.
Yes.
No, I don't believe that.
That's the nails in a device called a tenter. Check it out. Tenter hooks, people. It's not tender hooks.
Oh, well.
Look, it seems to make sense, but yeah.
I mean,
apparently,
I've never been known for my correct pronunciation on the show, so why change anything?
I'm correcting you.
Well,
everyone
thank you.
Loves being corrected, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
What have you been playing, Connor?
What have I been playing? Well, most of my gaming has been with Def, actually, and Def showed me Escape Plan the other week, which. That game is awesome.
Oh, so good. God,
that is like so next level. You know, and it's so funny because it really is like a resource management game, but the resources aren't wood, coal. Like it's, you know, it's your spaces, it's your, you know, it's your gangs, it's all that type of stuff. Like I just.
Efficient movement.
Yeah.
Not getting shot at.
And so. I had this thing. I had this reservation about playing it because I was like, I can't be left in the city. I have to escape. I was like, I don't care if I have the least amount of money. I have to escape. So I was like, we got to like the first turn of the last round and I'm like, I'm out of here. I've escaped. Like,
Def shaking his head. Like,
because it effectively then like, because obviously then you have to pay more after you leave.
Yeah, you stressed everyone else out.
Yeah, they're like, oh my God. And Harry goes, no, you don't understand, like, how much stress I'm under right now. Like, I've really – like, it was so good. But, oh, yeah, Def is very rarely wrong. And he's like, oh, you'll love this game. And I really, really did. Like, it is so thematic.
So much fun as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's a bit different to Vital's other games because, like, you know, the theme is, like, it causes you to, you know – I don't know, have a different attitude in the game. It's just so much fun. I love it. And I think that the more players you have, the better. It's not a, you know, there's no huge downtime between turns and stuff. It's a great game.
Yeah. I mean, I was just, you're right. Like the downtime was almost non-existent. And you spend the whole time going, don't move there. Don't move that police officer there. Like, don't you dare. Oh, my God. Because everything's so
you can't say anything. You don't want to, like, you want to lay low. You're like, please don't. Oh.
And, like, my poker face is not very good. So it was a good thing we were playing it over TTS because you probably would have been able to feel, like, the stress radiating off me. Or, like, Connor, why are you sweating? Why are you sweating? Have you been for a run?
I'm just thinking of that meme.
Yeah, that's the Key and Peele meme. It's exactly what I was like. But, it's ripping game. And just another, you know, it's Vital. And what did you say, Def? I don't know if you said it before, but it's like he always does this, like, research into his game. So what research
we asked him. We asked him, well, when we had him on the show, I remember we asking him, you know, does he start with the mechanics? And he said, no, I always start with the theme. I do a whole bunch of research about the theme. And I was like, well, what did you exactly do for escape? Did you rob a bank?
Infiltrated a gang and went undercover.
Hey, if anyone's going to do it, it'd be Vital. And no one would be any the wiser. But he's like, let's go. Yep. He's been here the whole time. Well, Def talked about Burn Cycle, and I saw that you've been playing Burn Cycle, Sarah. So what do you think of it?
I really like it. I really dig it a lot. I got a bit confused by the whole IP board and moving that around. You got like a little mini game going on. over there. But yeah, I mean, just like the other Chip Theory games, there is so much overhead in terms of what everything so much neighboring. But so, like, there's a lot of overhead. Like, there's a lot to get through. It's definitely not, you know, a walk in the park to learn. But and like Cloud Spy, they've done like a learn to play, and I think that's really neat. I don't think it was as easy to follow or as comprehensive, I should say, as the Cloud Spy walkthrough. Yep, yep. The Cloud Spy walkthrough, for some reason, made more sense to me, and it sort of everything clicked a little easier.
I agree.
Yeah. But so this one, I mean, maybe it's just there's more going on in this one. I'm not sure. But I am super keen on the actual gameplay itself. I thought it was really cool. I like the whole, you know, trying to stay out of the way of the guards. I liked the keypad, like, and I'm not a skill check person, okay? I get really frustrated by skill checks. Are you laughing because of the, I don't know if you're laughing because of the Arkham Horror card game, but like every time I hit skill check, I'm like, oh my God, that bad, you know, like that.
I was more thinking like, you know, our current D&D game is sort of on hiatus, but Mitch is going to be listening, be like, okay, more and more skill checks for Sarah. Skill check. Let's make it like you've got to have a critical success to, or, you know.
Yeah. You got to get a natural 20. Yeah. Yeah. So, but in this, it was cool. Like the keypads I thought was really cool. I like the fact that you can like, with some of the actions, if you're using the right, you're using it on the right chip, then you've got like an advantage there. Was it optimized, right? Optimized action.
Yeah.
That's really clever. There's so many different bots. I didn't realize how many different bots you could play as. That's one thing that's really cool. The bots aren't that different. It's not like you have to learn like an entire, you know, in Too Many Bones, you've got a character that is so complex with so many different skills and you're like, what? Yeah.
They only have three abilities. And
that's right. And that's it. So, yeah, I think it's really neat.
But would I be correct in saying, like, we've talked about this before when we talked about Too Many Bones on the show, but the gear locks are the game, whereas to me it feels like with Burn Cycle, there's a game and then the robots, the bots, are kind of just like the vessels that you use to move around the board and to complete the objective.
Yeah. I think it's more about the missions for sure and cooperating and that whole, experience working together. Yeah.
I've played now, I think, 8 missions or maybe it's like 6 because I've played a couple twice. And all of them feel very, very different. And I think you're both right. Like it's not about the bots and their abilities. These are just like a nice alternative, you know, couple of abilities that you can trigger. They're cool, but they're not where you're focusing so much. But the missions can be so different. Like some of them are all about deception and trying to avoid the guards to get your objectives and stuff. And some others are vastly different. Like played one the other day where you have to manipulate a guard or lure him onto a terminal chip and then stun him while he's on the terminal chip. Mm-hmm. So he kind of short circuits or whatever. And then he attacks and shuts down any guard that ends up next to him. So you're trying to bring all of these guards next to each other. And he starts shutting down other guards. And that's the mission. So it's a completely different. You're not trying to avoid them anymore.
Yeah.
You're trying to draw them in. Yeah, so like I think that they must have. I was thinking about this today. They must have had, you know, a huge amount of fun creating these missions because they're like all over the place, so different to each other. And I think that's where all the sort of gameplay and variability comes in. It's been great fun exploring it, and it's not a game I would usually play. Like I'm not big on stealth games and stuff like that. Not even video games. So was a big surprise to me.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I think it's really nice that they're branching out, doing something different because they are clearly very, very good at doing that, like, character building thing. Like, they are amazing at that, and it's good to see that they're also really good at doing something else, just making a pure cooperative experience and also just using that attention to detail that they're so good at to do, you know, the cool missions instead.
I can't remember which of the board game YouTube channels it could have been the Dice Tower, it could have been Man versus Meeple, but they consistently always get like production as an award, and they kind of like had a tongue-in-cheek joke saying, you know, oh, it'd be great, you know, if we actually got, you know, recognized for something like, I don't know, gameplay instead of just being production. But it's kind of like, you know, they're so lavish and everyone loves playing them and playing with those parts that, you know, I think people forget how good those games actually are. Like Cloud Spire still for me is one of the most fun puzzles you can play in board games. Like, and then you have the solo mode, right, which you're playing against like a finite opponent, and then you play it against someone else and it becomes totally different, like, you know, chess kind of ish game / MOBA. Like, it's just, yeah, they're very, very, like you said, Sarah, they're very, very clever, and they've sort of got, they've carved themselves out a little niche that I think could have not gone their way, if that makes sense. Like, you know, people could be like, no, I'm just not getting those games because they're too expensive. But
yeah, too expensive.
People want to buy them because the experiences are so great.
Yeah. I agree.
But yeah, you raise an interesting point about the flashiness. See, that's why you got to go beige. If you make beige games, people will never compliment you for your production.
Hey, well, look, some of the coin games that Def's shown to me, they're not beige per se, but, you know, the production is good, but they're not flashy by any means. It's like your token is literally a token. There's like a circular piece of wood.
With super tiny font on there, you know, like, what does it say?
lots of cubes.
Yeah. Which general is this? Like, it's like, I can't tell. Yeah.
It's the light brown general.
Well, speaking of cubes, I feel like that's a segue to talk about my sizzling game. I played Clinic for the first time. I've only played it once, but I'm sizzling it.
Sizzle it. It's
been good.
Sizzle it. It was really good. I enjoyed it so much. And it's so funny because I remember I've talked to Def about this game and we have, I think, very different opinions on it. Because Def was like, oh, it's all about parking management. And now I can totally see where you're coming from, where the frustration is, right? So every time you bring someone into the clinic, I mean, it's a hospital, right? It's a hospital, not a clinic. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's a hospital.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, like as opposed to like a GP clinic.
Yeah. In Australia, a clinic seems like a really small thing. This is like more like a big hospital. Yeah. You have to have it's not super convoluted, but you do have – there are certain rules, like if you've got a treatment room, you have to have a special like services room next to it. And it basically has to be a block of three rooms to even function. So that's kind of the tricky part to it, because you start filling up this your little board. It's not a huge board at all. And then you have to make sure that there's a big car park in there somewhere, because every time you hire a doctor, hire a nurse, bring in a patient, blah, 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 and patients cubes. That's why I was like, cubes. Every time you bring someone in, you get a car. And you have to put the car in the car park. Otherwise, you're not getting that patient, or you're not hiring that nurse, because there's nowhere to put their car. They will, you know, they refuse to park on the street like three streets down or whatever.
Can you give them like a year's worth of train tickets or tram tickets or something like that?
No, they won't do it. But, okay, so this is the funny part. Instead of me thinking this is a parking management game, I feel like that is the limitation that this game needs. You need some kind of, like, every game needs a limitation, and Agricola, you're feeding your workers.
Whatever.
Like, you can't go crazy. There's always got to be a downside. Like Sulcan, right? You need the corn. Otherwise, you got to feed them.
Cacao.
Yeah, so you have to have – sorry, I just thought that would make Connor laugh, and it did. Okay, so you have to have some kind of limitation. Otherwise, you're just going to be like, I'm bringing in everything and you don't get anything. I'm going to bring in all the patients. None of you getting any patients, you know. And it's really – like, it's pretty simple, really. You have like three actions every round, and you have – you can do like the same action twice, no more than twice. So if you're admitting patients, you can do it twice. You've got a certain amount of moves that you can do based on it's a pretty kind of thematic game, but I feel like this is kind of just interesting. Like, if you've got helipads and different entrances to your hospital, you can do more movement with the patients on the board. Not really that thematic, but doesn't matter. So you can take more patients into your
Are they high priority? Is that why? Because they've been helicoptered in?
I don't know.
So you're rushing around more?
Maybe you just get more patients just because there's more entrances and people just get sucked into the entrances. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. The more entrances, the better. People just fall in. They just fall into the clinic.
Hospital vacuum. Yeah. The common phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So it's not more rooms that you have, it's more entrances. Right. So, yeah, so it was really fun. I kept admitting a lot of patients, and Lyndon and Mo were getting really annoyed with me because I just kept taking all the patients. Because what you can do is you actually have the section on your board where you can put patients before they even enter your hospital. So you can put them there and you can cook them. What I mean by that is you can allow them, so they start off white, these cubes, when they're not that sick. And you can ignore your patients and let them get sicker. Like at the end of the round, they'll go yellow and then they'll go orange, they'll go red. When you treat like a red patient, you're going to get a lot. I was going to swear then. You get a lot more money.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So you can like cook them until they're like red. they're ready to go.
Well done.
Yeah, they're well done and you get lots of – yeah, but then – there's the risk, right? Because if you haven't sorted out your hospital, let's say I get a patient that has a knee injury, if I haven't done the whole, you know, bone section in my hospital, if I don't have that going on, then I'm in trouble. I've got this patient that can't be treated and you lose points for that and stuff. And also it's tricky because if there's only one build of each specific type of treatment room that you can do in a round. So if someone does that before you, if someone sees that you've got this patient that desperately needs a leg, they can buy that room and it's like, oh, you don't have that room until the next round. And then you're like, no, but I've got a red patient and he's going to get cooked. And then they get overcooked. But you know what? It's really fun. It's a little bit stressful, but I think that I really like the limitation. I like the fact that, you cannot just take everyone's patients. You can't take them all because, as I said, you've got to like put the cars somewhere and you got to make sure you actually can treat them. So you can't just stop everyone from doing the things they want to do as well.
This has like a bajillion expansions, doesn't it?
And I'm super keen to try the different things.
Is one of them – actually, didn't they bring something out like – when the pandemic was starting and they were kind of like, yeah, like we're going to use like – it was like a contagion one.
Yeah.
But all of the funding went to research. I could be
– oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, I don't know. It was like rather than us profiting off like the situation we're in, we're actually like trying to raise money for it. And obviously they needed some money to produce it. But, as far as I know, they just said, no, we're actually going to be donating the rest of the money to like research to help people. Or whether that was like, you know, building those pop-up hospitals when the stuff was really
bad.
That's
really nice.
That whole idea of you going, me like watching like you or Dev and like you, like, okay, I'll build my osteo sort of path area or like, you know, the bone area. It's like, no, you can't treat a broken bone with antibacterial. Like you can't do that.
Like, what are you doing? Yeah. It's really tricky. Oh, and I didn't even talk about like it's more complex than I am explaining it too, because there's like a whole movement phase. You've got to pay for like the movement. You've got to in time.
And then you've got the appointment bookings.
Yeah, and then you've got to pay, you know, then there's the economy element to it, like you're earning stuff from patients, but then you've got to pay everybody. Everyone wants to get paid in the hospital. What's the deal there? You've got to pay all your doctors. You've got to pay all your nurses. You've got to pay the orderlies. You've got to pay maintenance on like all of your rooms.
But they don't clean themselves? All these infectious diseases?
Can't just sanitize. What's the deal? No, they don't. Rude. And then there's gardens you can build. I went a bit garden heavy because you get extra from patients that are next to gardens. They want to look at gardens. Garden heavy. Yeah, garden strategy.
That laugh tells me that the garden's the worst thing you could have
filmed. Yeah, like, that's the worst thing. Excuse me, I won, so I didn't fail. which leads me to that. Like, that's why I brought up the question of the pod, but that's for later. But I actually won. I liked it. I didn't think it was an easy game. I think it was a hard game. I loved all the limitations. I love the fact that you've got to like spend all this money all the time, but you've got to like also reserve. Oh, that's the other thing. So you're spending all this money on the maintenance of the hospital and paying everybody. Then it's like, do you want to buy points?
Hmm.
That's how you get points, is also spending that money. But then you want to keep some of the money to buy rooms stuff, and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always great. That's a great choice. That reminds me of, you know, Def, when we played Tinner's Trail, and you can choose to invest your money to get points. But then if you do that, you've got no money. If you invest like the max amount, like I can't build any, I can't do any auctions. So then everyone's just like, I'm going to buy this site for $2. It's like, right, or £2 or whatever it was. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the question is, are you still interested in a career in healthcare, Sarah, after playing after the game this? Clinic? Yeah.
You know I am. Maybe not in a hospital.
A self-cleaning clinic that no one wants to get paid in and has a nice garden.
Yeah. Yes, has a nice garden, definitely.
Extra points for a surgery room with a view, with a window too. That looks over a garden. Yeah, right. When I played it, I thought, yeah, the parking thing was really annoying. Maybe not, like, maybe I'm overplaying this, but the meeples are so tiny that they are so fiddly to move around the parking spots and between your buildings and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the multiple floors that you can build like a second and third floor on your hospital, they seem to be quite, I don't know, they seem like there was always seemed to be something else that you had to do to basically run around and cover for something as opposed to expanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was good. Like I had fun playing it, but I sold it after a few plays. It just wasn't as enjoyable as many, many other midweight and heavy games. And you're right, Sarah, it's quite complex. There's a lot of moving parts and there's like, I think three expansions included in the deluxe edition or something. Like small expansions, but they like start making a difference.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it has like a big expansion as well now, doesn't it? Or two.
I think so. I think it has big chunky ones.
There's been like a second, I don't know, like base game, but there has been a couple of big expansions that have come out. But yeah, it's always one where I thought, I don't know if I would like this game, but I heard so many good things. Like I heard, you know, even the way that you've talked about it, Sarah, it does sound like an interesting game to play. Mm. Like that juggling of, not necessarily the car parking, but the juggling of like spending the money and all that type of stuff. Like that's, but again, like I can have that in other games where, you know, you're spending money to determine if you want to get points or, you know, you want to leave it for the next round. So, definitely one that, hey, if you're happy to teach it, I'm happy to play it. But,
oh, God, teaching it. Oh. No, I would,
well,
for sure.
I'm happy to play it with you and someone else can teach it then.
We'll just Def to teach it even though he doesn't like it, and then he can leave.
Did you play it at full player count?
Three. I played it at three.
Three, and it was fine with three.
It was good, yeah.
Yeah,
it was
okay, cool.
Yeah.
There's not a huge amount of interaction, but there is that central board where you sort of compete for the prices of the nurses and the
appointment
appointment bookings for the
patients. Yeah, the patients, people can move those around and take the good ones. And
what's I remember vaguely now, there's this funny part that always made me laugh in this game where you, because it costs a lot of time to move people around and then you lose victory points or something like that.
Yeah,
they have these like automatic belts that you build all around the hospital conveyor belts to automate the movement of people.
Yeah.
Like,
teleporters
in the hospitals.
Yeah. Like, it's cool. On. I like that.
Is that to move patients or people? Like, or
any,
their workers?
It can move any. It has to be in a straight line. It can be a lift going between levels,
between floors.
Or it could be a moving walk from like you come into the hospital and you go.
Yeah, so you place doctors, nurses, side. Patients, luggage, anything on top of it, it just moves along.
It moves along.
Reaches a destination.
Cool, I like it. They can just zip, zip, zoom throughout the hospital. Anyway, that's probably enough about clinic. But I do like it. You've heard Deaf Side. Deaf sold it. I like it. I want to try all the things.
The experience is that fun.
Connor, tell us about Flesh and Blood. I'm very curious about this.
It's nowhere near as graphic as it sounds. So I don't mean to do this to people on purpose, but I feel like I talk about card games a lot and card games that people have to invest a lot of money in to get some out of. So I do apologize if I'm costing you a lot of money. I'm getting zero commission, by the way, just in case people are wondering. So I've talked before about how I'm a fan of Magic the Gathering. So Flesh and Blood is kind of like this new competitor to Magic the Gathering. In Magic the Gathering, if you're not aware, no offense, but you're probably living under a rock, if you're not aware, it's this massive collectible card game where instead of you going out and buying a single expansion, you pay like between $5 and $10 for a packet of like 14 cards. And when you open the deck, the packs up, then you get a random like assortment of cards. So Flesh and Blood sort of follows the same model. But what I really like about it is that it's really, really simple in its gameplay, but then builds on its complexity. Because what happens is you start with one hero. I always call him a hero. It's like a character that you effectively control, and they are your life force. So they have a set amount of life, and there's two different versions of each hero or character that you can play. So there's like a legendary version, which has more health if you want the games to go for longer, or there's like the standard version, which has like 15 to 20. And depending on, you know, how sturdy a character is, or, you know, the different variables about your character will determine how much health they have. But
is that a natural stat, sturdiness?
Sturdiness, yeah. It's like how hard it's like how hard the card can be pushed off the table. No, nothing to do with it. It's not a dexterity game. So you get this deck of cards, and similar to Marvel Champions in that you effectively use the cards in your hand to pay for other cards. So cards will like have a maximum value of like three resources, and then the cards will have a cost. So what you're doing is and it's different to Marvel Champions in that you're playing against an opponent. So whereas Marvel Champions is a cooperative adventure and you team up to fight a Marvel villain, you're playing against one another. There's a whole bunch of different themes going on depending on like what group of cards you want to play with or whatever. But me and my brother played almost like two ninjas against each other. So my character, she was really cool. Anytime she did an attack, she could like unexhaust a card and then do it again and keep playing cards. So she was able to like really combo through her cards and attack. His one was more about like getting one weapon out and then attacking. So you can equip weapons that you can use, you know, multiple times as opposed to just like one attack. So if you play like one card, it's one attack and it might deal three and you have to discard it. Whereas if you play a weapon, you get to use that weapon once a turn, and sometimes you might get a benefit for using that weapon. So, for example, if you attacked with a particular weapon, it meant that your character could heal or something like that. But there's so many, and I don't have enough knowledge, but there's so many different heroes that you can play as and whatever. But what I really, really liked is I think what people enjoy Magic the Gathering for is once you play a card, then your opponent can then play a card to defend against it. And then you can then go play a card and it forms what's called a chain. And then depending on how many different cards there are in the chain, it will have an effect on, you know, the next card that you play or whatever. So you're pretty much building these decks to be able to combo into one another and to fight one another. I think it's really, really fun. I think if you're looking at getting into a collectible card game, definitely look into Flesh and Blood. It's very, very popular amongst the collectible card game like community. I think like my local game stores always have them in stock. They're always running tournaments and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, it's just a really interesting take on the collectible card game, and that's something that I have played a lot of over my time in board games. So, yeah, Flesh and Blood, if you're interested in that, I definitely think you should go and check it out.
Connor, do you think that some of these games, because there's been a few of those the last few years, do you think that they're trying to fill, you know, a gap in that space? Because Magic, you know, has been sort of king of the hill for decades now. And, you know, the big thing with these games, I think, is slightly different to sort of tabletop board games, because they almost rely on, you know, the build-up of this huge audience, global audience, and there's tournaments everywhere. And because they're quick and they have this personalization almost element to them about your deck and whatever else. So do you think that it's trying to sort of, it's filling in a gap in that space? Is there a gap, or is there, like, you know, an influx of games, or it's basically like Magic has so much content now that it's nothing is ever going to sort of catch up, you know what I mean?
I think it actually has an advantage, because without sort of getting into the minutiae of it all, it's like you said, Magic has this huge, ginormous card pool. And I think people are just like, well, I don't know what's a good card or what's a bad card, you know, what's going to work with my deck or whatever. The cool thing about Flesh and Blood is that depending on the hero you pick, there's only certain cards that you can slot into that deck. So while it might seem limiting compared to, you know, other card games where it's like the world's your oyster, you're actually being benefited by saying, well, no, you can't play X card with Y card because you don't have the ability to do that. Now, there's some cards that are universal, but they're really, really simple, like like a single attack or a heal or something like that.
Mm.
So I think it's similar in a way to, again, Marvel Champions, how you come in and you have that character deck and all those cards can only be used with your character, and then you've got some cards that you can slot in to complement it. So, yeah, for sure. I think it definitely – that's how it's trying to compete with Magic. It's trying to be a bit more beginner-friendly.
Contained.
Yeah, contained and beginner-friendly.
It's very funny you mentioned Marvel Champions, because I was thinking of exactly that example I had from the last couple of days, where my oldest daughter wanted to play I got the Arkham Horror what campaign was it?
Carcosa?
Path to Carcosa campaign a few days ago, and we wanted to play it, and I opened the investigator's box expecting to find pre-made decks, and that wasn't the case. And there's no suggestions, there's no starter deck lists in there. I had to look it up on the internet, and it took me like an hour and a half to find something. And turns out I had to pull out the core game investigator cards and mix and match cards. It took me like half an hour to get the decks done. And by that time, my daughter has lost her interest, obviously, so I have to sort of pick it up a different day. And yesterday, Harry and I sat down to play Marvel Champions, and neither of us had played it before. We opened the box. There were two pre-made Cafe the Heroes. We were up and running in 3 minutes. And, you know, preferences aside for these games, like Arkham Horror seems to be more sort of something I would prefer to play, but it does make a huge difference, you know, trying to sort of talk to or address this audience that is into card games and likes, you know, deck building and spends weeks into researching decks and stuff. And some other people that just want to have fun with pre-made decks
or easy
to build decks. I think you're right. I think it's a different market. And
totally different audience, I would say.
So the other aspect of it, and again, this is if you had limitless amounts of money, like this would be the game for you, because you can go out and you can buy these what's called pre-con decks, so pre-constructed, and you can open them up and play with them straight out of the box. There's no need to sort of, and it's always the same cards in them. So it's a bit like the hero packs that you get with Marvel Champions, in that how you can open them up, you take the identity card out, you shuffle the cards up, and you're ready to go. That's the same thing with these. You take the hero card out, shuffle them up, and they've already got the cards that you need for that particular type of hero. They're sort of synergized to sort of give you, to make it fun and all that type of stuff. So that's what we played with over the weekend is we played.
And it's kind of like a fair fight because you know, they've designed it specifically.
And sometimes you can buy the packs that have the two that will fight against each other. So yeah, like, well, this is, and you know, you sort of have two different experiences. So you go, oh, okay, let's swap. So I've played as, you know, the orc, and you can play as the elf, and then we'll swap it and play it again. So I think now, like you said, Magic is so big, like nothing is going to sort of take it down. It's just too well known. It's got so much money behind it. You know, it's owned by Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro. So, but this one definitely, due to the ease of entry, I think has a real shot and at least surviving. Whereas there's so many card games I've seen over the years that have come in, had like a big month or two, maybe a big 6 months, and then they just can't compete. Like, people are like, oh, it's fine. And it's funny, like you talked about the new question of the pod, Sarah. I wonder how many people are like, yeah, I've played this card game, I played that card game, but I always come back to playing Magic. Like, so is that like someone's game that always makes it to the table because it's easy, because they know it, because all their friends play it? And that's what these games, unless you have someone that you're happy to sort of always play against or whatever, they survive on these communities, which have been really hard to maintain over COVID, because people haven't been able to get together for such a long time. So, I think considering it did release like early 2020 or something like that, they've done a really good job in keeping themselves afloat, and they don't have a digital market like Magic does either.
I was about to say that's Magic's other advantage, right? Because they've got the online, you know, like that's so well done as well. And I didn't know this. I found this out when I was in the US because I was talking to someone that's really into Magic. You actually have to buy the cards. Like, you have to buy your cards online as well as a separate thing. Like, I thought if you bought them physically, you'd have like a QR code or something that. Yeah, yeah. No, you have to buy them again.
Yeah,
so I didn't know that. It's madness. Oh my God. Yeah. They must be making a killing.
And vice versa, how, like, if you get a card digitally, it means next to nothing. Like, because as far as I know, please correct me in the comments if I'm wrong, but I couldn't sell you or give you my digital card that I've won or opened, like, for you to use. Like, not the same one.
Unlike the physical ones where you can sell.
Like, oh, no, I'll sell it to you or trade it to you for that. I think if you're interested, it's pretty affordable too. Like, as far as I know, you know, you can get the double packs, and they come with some.
So you're talking about Flesh and Blood now, not Magic. Magic is not affordable.
No.
We've established this.
Yeah. I think I've learned, like, my spending habits should not be repeated by other people. Warhammer, Magic, and Flight games. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the pace and how quick it played, and there's a little bit of, you know, some really important choices you had to make that I think added to the game that Magic didn't have. And it was a lot simpler in a way, but I think a little bit more fulfilling than sometimes you can play a really, really good game of Magic and be like, that was really fun. And other times you're like, oh, I'm just going to concede because there's no way I can beat this deck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens. But, that's Flesh and Blood. Give it a look if you're interested in trading card games or maybe dipping your toe in.
Nice.
Awesome.
So what about you, Def? Do you want to tell us about Five Tribes? Which is like how long has Five Tribes been around for? It's been around for a little while, right?
Decade, I would
say. It's like a classic, yeah. I haven't played it in so long.
Yeah, it's a Days of Wonder, published by Days of Wonder. But the design is Bruno Cathala, who gave us Seven Wonders and so many other great games. Mm-hmm. So yes, Five Tribes is like a bit of a, would you call it an interesting a twist on worker placement, guys?
Yeah, like it's like a Mancala.
Have you both played it, Connor? Have you played it?
No, it's another game that you promised to show me, and I can't be mad at you because you have shown me so many games over the past 6 months.
I know it's got the Mancala thing, right? Like you pick up a stack of the meeples, and then you like drop one on each tile.
Yeah. So the way it works is there's like this stack of tiles, like quite big tiles that you, I think there's 30 of them, and you make a map, like a 5x6 map, which is like always random. And these tiles, you then shuffle this massive bag of 90 meeples of like five different colors in them, and you chuck three meeples at random in each tile. And the way it works is players take turns, and you can pick up any all the meeples from any single tile, and then you kind of move along the map in adjacent tiles, dropping one meeple at a time, and then on the last tile, you have to match a meeple of the same color as the one you're dropping, and then you take all of those meeples and you take their action, and like this, five different meeples, and they do different things. One gets you resource cards, another one gets you points, another one is assassins, they kill meeples in other tiles. And the goal is to basically, if you clear a tile completely with your move, then you take control of that tile, and that's one of the ways you get points. But there's other ways to score points in the game. So it also has like this interesting bidding mechanic at the start of each round, where players bid for turn order with their money, which is points at the end of the game. So you kind of try to balance again, how much do you want to go first? Do you want to go first enough to say bid, you know, 8 or 13 coins in a single round, while, you know, the scores are in the final scores are like 100 and 150 points. Yeah, it was the first time I've played it at three players, and it's a very, very different game, because in a two-player game, you each take two bidding markers or player markers, and so you can do two turns in a round, while in a three- and four-player game, you only have one of these. And I found it a lot more competitive and close than a two-player game, when, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to score massive points with emptying tiles and stuff. It's not a difficult game by any measure. Like, the rules are only a few pages. I think probably, you know, families with, I don't know, 10-year-old children or even a little younger would play this game easily. It's great fun. Like, it's great fun because of all of the, you know, the picking up and dropping off the meeples on the board. It's really fun game. And I think that designs like this are quite lasting, you know what I mean? Like, I've played this game a few years ago, and I realized that, you know, it's a game that I would easily play at any opportunity. Like, I would never say, oh, you know, I'm bored of this game, or I don't want to play it. You know what I mean? And you do have those moments with other games, and this is just fantastic design and quite different from other sort of Euro games in the same sort of category. Yeah, it's just a great game.
Do you think you sort of don't get bored with it because it is a simplistic game? Like, it's not bogged down by copious amounts of rules, or sort of, you know, like, you know, there's nothing that you've got to consistently check up, or you don't have your head buried in the rule book. Is that part of the appeal, do you think?
I think it's not the simplicity of it, because there's other games that we kind of, not just myself, but everybody in the family kind of grew out of or got over. And an example I have in my mind, because I was talking about it with Harry earlier today, is Tokaido, which is, you know, a good game, but we wouldn't play it anymore. There's other games that, like, so Five Tribes, we would pick, you know, over Tokaido any time. I think it's just a very, very solid design. The mechanics are really good. It's got a great mix of, you know, initial random setup because of all the meeples and all the tiles.
I was about to say, is it the puzzle of the meeples too? Like, because you do sit there and you analyze the board, and then someone else does something, and then the board looks different, and then you're analyzing it again, and you want to get the most, you know, out of your meeples, I guess, right?
Does it call because AP them?
It could, because in some cases you got to think about how this works. When you start dropping off meeples, some tiles empty, but some others end up with 5, 6, 7 meeples on them. So that means that when you pick those up, you can you can take a much bigger, variety of moves, because, well, if it's 7 meeples, you can move 7 tiles, which means you can do wildly different things on the board. And it could cause a bit of delay about, you know, when people are trying to figure out what they can do. But I think the bidding mechanic is very clever, because what happens is, and I'm assuming the more you play this game, the more you realize it, that you can, you know, sometimes you're worried about leaving a single color meeple on the tile with your move, because that means the next player can take control of that tile if there's a valid illegal move there. But you can take advantage of that by simply bidding, you know, a lot more money than them to go first on the next round. So I think the bidding mechanic makes it a lot more interesting in that space. I don't think the game would be the same without that. But yeah, it's just a great twist on, you know, those types of sort of classic Euro games. Production is nice, like it's nothing too fancy. It's Days of Wonder level, like think Ticket to Ride kind of thing. In the game, you also have these djinns, like these sort of spirit cards that you can buy by activating some of the tiles. And they get you some points at the end of the game, but they also get you some like special abilities that you can use during your turn, which is an extra level of fun. But yeah, it's a great game, and I think, you know, it plays probably in an hour, I would say. It's not a long game. Just the right amount of fun and thinkiness.
Would it be your second favorite game with a Mancala mechanism, perhaps?
With a what, sorry?
What is he trying to say? What's the first one? The Mancala thing.
Guard Project?
Does that have a Mancala?
Kind of. Like, you got to move them around and you can't move it until...
Oh, the power thing.
Yeah, because you can't move it to the next one until the first one's empty, and then you've got to keep moving
around.
I mean, it's not the same as the...
Is
it from Africa, right? Like, Mancala from Africa, like with how they drop the... Kind of.
Yes.
Maybe I was clutching at straws there, but
Like the way you were looking at us with your eyes, like we're supposed to pick this up, and I am not picking up what he's putting down at all.
both of you second favorite one then, because of it's the same thing in
Terramystica. Yeah. I think you're right. I guess that's Mancala, kind of. Well, actually, no, it's not, because you're not picking up and putting them along the way. You like actually have to push up the.
Yeah,
the old ones before the, which is frustrating as all hell. That's like literally, you're talking about the worst part of one of our favorite games.
What are you talking about?
I just want to pretend that it doesn't exist. It's like the worst part.
Always makes fun about how much power I charge in Guy.
I love that part.
He's like, what are you doing, you mad man? And he gets to the end, it's like, you know, Dev spent like 5 points charging power. Harry spent like 3. Connor spent 20 points charging power.
I always, like, I think one of the first things I do is burn some of those discs.
Anyway, we're
digressing here.
True.
Let's talk about, because since you were talking about Five Tribes, Steph, that's a perfect segue for the question of the pod recap.
So guys, you know what I like about Advent Games website? When I want to go on to get a game, I can go in there, I can go to the categories, I can click on games to play solo, and all the results come up are all games that I know are going to play solo.
Well, that's all very well, but what if I don't want to play solo?
Well, then you choose a different play account. You can
I could just choose gateway games or favorite designers?
All different categories there. On advent.com.au, just go there, it'll expansions, new releases, new arrivals, pre-orders, all split up into different categories.
Do they also have back in stock, hobbyist board games, family? I'm not reading this at all off the website. Card games, all games A2K, all games Delta Z, accessories and sleeves, award winners, classics, dice, dings and dents.
All of those and more.
Fabulous.
My sole favourite is the pre-orders. I will scour the pre-orders for Kickstarters that I might have missed and check those out to see if there's anything in there that I really want to buy that's like hard to find.
Yeah, that's true, because I know you miss a lot.
Yeah.
And Dean is, I mean, the service Dean provides is just second to none.
Yeah.
He comes to our game days. I'm not sure if you guys have been to Sydney that often.
I met him when I was at one of the first Sydney game days. What a great guy.
Oh, top bloke. Yeah. And, you know.
Oh, and has a voice. The dulcet tones of Dean. Yeah, you know, here's a fun fact. Dean actually did the announcements of number one, number two when we did our top tens last year.
Yeah, for those of you that were at the last Sydney game day doing the setup, you may have even caught Dean doing a little bit of a duet on the microphone with yours truly before we got started.
And don't forget all the shipping as well. It's flat rate $10 if you live in Sydney metro area and $15 flat rate all around Australia, which is gold.
So if you need games, get onto adventgames.com.au, check out all the different selections that are available, grab what you need, and Dean will get it to you ASAP. Thanks, Advent Games, for supporting the podcast.
Okay, So the pod question last time was, what games just keep coming out, right? Which kind of games keep coming back to the table? Def just kind of answered that for himself. I said, I actually put it in the Facebook community. I said Aeon's End, and people were like, oh, come on, that's not like an old one. Okay, fine. I still play El Grande. I still play Eclipse. Brass. I have quite a few.
Why do they have to be old? Like, I don't think they need to be old. Like, I think the question's more about, like, which games are you always happy to play? Yeah. Like that one, like Five Tribes. And like, so I think about, you know, which games do I sit down with my family and always play? And the one that always springs to mind is Point Salad. Like, Point Salad, I will always have a game of Point Salad. And I think even like Letter Jam is sort of in that.
Oh, same, yes.
Like that same where it's like everyone knows the rules. Everyone knows how quick it can be. And it's always and there was a comment actually from some people was like, oh, well, were we talking about filler games or were we talking about, like, you know, more complex games? So I think if we're talking about more complex games, for me, I think the game that always makes it back to the table is Spirit Island. Because I'm just like, yeah, what's the next puzzle that I'm going to try and beat? What's the next spirit? What are the next spirit combinations I'm going to use? So for me, it's that. Oh, I mean, Marvel Champions as well at the moment. Like, but if we're talking about older games, the oldest one I could probably think of is probably Spirit Island. So, but we had some great responses from the community. So I'll just go through a few here. We obviously can't go through them all. I wish we could, but we can't. But we had Alex Kelly, so talking about Takenoko, Gloomhaven, Terraforming Mars. We had Dirty Rascal Games, which talked about Shadows Over Camelot, which so this is all on the Facebook community.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah. We had a bloke called Jules Watson. I don't know who he is. So Jules said Aura Flame.
I still haven't played that. God damn.
How are these ones? So this is a great one from Ben Todd. He had Stone Age, Ghost Blitz, Sheriff of Nottingham, and Bang the Dice Games. So that's a really good sort of I guess
he's having fun game nights.
Stone Age is like a classic worker placement. What else have I got here? Oh, here one. So Jamie Lawrence has put a few. So he must play a fair few games, Jamie. So he got Infinite City, Dune Imperium, The Crew. Duh, like that. How good is that?
Oh, yeah.
Suburbia, Valley of Kings, which is interesting because I haven't played that, but it sounds interesting. Arkham Horror, Unfair, The Dresden Files, co-op game, DC Deck Building, Isle of Sky, and this will be Jules' best mate, Inish. So, you know, Wingspan comes up there, you know, heaps. And then in our Discord community, I'll just run through a couple we've had. So people have talked about how their games, they only play, like they, because they game with their partner so much. So like two-player games. You know, people have said Blood Rage. What else? Jace has said like things like Styx Nymph, Fuji Flash, Coup, Skull, Just One, you know, all these great games.
All those little card games are easy to bring out.
So it's interesting. Interesting
though, because it's like so big for, and you expect all the small, quick, fun games to be there, but there's a huge variety there, which is fantastic.
I think some people, so one of the folks who contributes a lot on Discord, Jonathan, he sort of said, you know, I've got games like Codenames, also Clover, but because he likes to play sort of his game solo, he's got Hadrian's Wall up a bit, which would be similar for me, I guess. Too Many Bones, he said he plays that every couple of months. And then he's got so across all groups, he's got Blood Rage, Catan, you know, because for him, he said, Blood Rage keeps hitting the table. It was my first proper hobby game. First proper hobby game purchase after Catan, and it has that nostalgia. Plus, it's a great game for people who are new to Aero Control, who are experienced. So, you've got games that are you know, I guess people might consider filler games. You've got games that are easy to learn. You've got games that introduce mechanics that are used in every other game. So heaps of great responses. So, yeah, definitely keep them coming, guys. They were, that was a very, very great read. And it makes me go, why don't I play that game more? Like, of course.
Yeah.
A couple of people mentioned Blood Rage, and then JB mentioned Blood Rage, and I was like, oh, we had so many great Blood Rage games, like when we first started the podcast.
We were all in
isolation, and I was like, oh, it just brought back so many good memories. So, yeah. But you'll have to wait until the end of the episode to find out what the next question is. Isn't that right, Sarah?
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, we're going to make you wait.
Yeah, make you wait.
And you have to listen to the whole show.
Yeah, listen to the whole show. So, yeah, please, on Facebook, we'll have another Facebook post for that, and keep posting and in our Discord as well. So, yeah, keep them coming. So, very, very good.
All right, so I just want to take a moment also to mention that we've got two game days that are coming up really soon. They're both this month. So we have Brisbane Game Day on August the 20th, and I'm going to be making an appearance to that one. I'm so excited. Woo-hoo. I booked my flights.
That wasn't exciting
teaching
enough.
Teaching some games.
Yeah, the problem. Yeah, the reason for that is Timmy works on the weekends now, so... it will be extremely challenging for me to even be there. So why the levels were, mediocre at best.
Sarah said she's going to come look after the girls for you, and you can go to the game now. That's what I
That's the only reason I'm going.
I got with Betty and Angie.
I said I'm coming to Brisbane for the game day, but not for the game day.
To help out with the game by looking after Betty and Angie,
Well, I know Andrew would definitely enjoy a new partner for Aeon Zen. So
yeah, I'll just play games with them all day. That's fine. And the other one is Melbourne Game Day, which is on August the 27th.
Yes.
And Connor is doing some wild gestures.
The Burn City. Woo, the Burn City.
What are you teaching, Connor?
What am I teaching? How to spend money. That's what I'm going to teach people.
Oh, no.
I thought that was my job.
I'm your apprentice. You teach me how to spend money, and then I teach other people.
Representative.
Yeah, I actually.
You guys say it like it's a challenge trying to get gamers to spend money. It's really not. It's really easy. I like this game, and they're like, "Oh."
Well, I'm actually thinking of putting up a teach for Merchant's Cove.
Awesome.
I think people need to play that game. And they've got a Kickstarter coming out soon. So if I can be like, people, this game's great. They can be like, I'm going to get this, and the new Kickstarter and. Final Frontier Games is awesome.
Yeah.
And get Tullywood.
Tullywood Grove. Yeah.
Tullywood Rally
and Barwood Grove.
Everything's Grove.
I think I'll Tullywood Grove.
Keep doing that.
So come along. There's still tickets to both of those. I'm pretty sure as of now there's still tickets. So, get a ticket. Come check us out. Come play games with us. Now is also a good time just to say, as we're talking about the question of the pod, thank you so much for our community. Like, you guys are amazing. You guys are always contributing so much. I have joined quite a lot of board game groups on Facebook. And we have really a special bunch of people. Like, you guys... The way that you guys help each other, talk to each other, engage, it's really lovely. It always just makes me so happy when I pop onto the Board Game Barbecue Facebook community. And also in Discord. There's always people in Discord. There's always people playing games. It's really lovely. If you haven't joined those communities yet and you're looking for like to meet new gamers or play games online, whatever, join us and check it out. Okay, so oaths. The moment of truth. let's start with you, Connor.
Yeah.
How did you go with your oath?
So my oath was to play the new Key to the Kingdom by Restoration Games with my family. And that was twofold because my mum used to play it with us, and then we played it together as siblings, and then now we've taught the new version to my nieces and my sister's kids. So I was successful.
Is that the one with the dragons that hold the different treasures and stuff.
But they've painted it out. I don't know this one. It was a classic game in the 90s. It was like,
oh man,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's got this board, right, that you go in the whirlpool and it unfolds. So you start off with like, you know, a reasonable size board and then it unfolds. But I really think that if you've got, okay, this is not a game that us three would play together. I'll just put that out there right now. Like, it's not that type of game, but it's really, really good. And it's really interesting the twist that Restoration Games have taken, because it's gone from being this, you know, kind of serious, like 90s fantasy style, to really ridiculous. They're like leaning into the humor. It's really funny. The art's fantastic. The production's really good. They've done some really cool things about how each of the characters has a special power, you know, and it breaks like the cardinal rule, or like commits the worst sin that you can in board games, where it's roll and move. So you roll the dice to move the space. But what you do is you start the game with all these items, and you can mitigate your rolls by adding or subtracting value. So in the end, it's definitely, I think on the box it says 7 and up. It's definitely like 7, and then, you know, maybe if you're a mid teenager until you have kids, maybe that's what it's for. But we had a ball, and it's so great. Like, you open it up, and yeah, all of the adventures you have to go on are just funny names, and there's some times where everyone has to roll at the same time, and you're trying to, you know, add your die together to make 7 or match it up. And yeah, so if you're looking for a board game that's kind of like an adventure game for, you know, I reckon ages, like maybe like 6 to 10, 6 to 12, definitely have a look at this. So I was so stoked to play. It was so fun. We had an absolute ball. And my mum ended up winning, which just shows that she's the true master of games in the family. Like, she won when we first played it, and she's winning now. So, yeah, that was really cool.
she's a pro. She's
an OG board gamer from way back, that lady. But I had a massive postage dump last week. Like, it was huge. I didn't really know it was coming, because for whatever reason, I think my notification emails are going straight to my junk mail. But I got a whole heap of expansions and big boxes to the West Kingdom. So, and along with also a game Def talked about, Circadian's First Light. So I got that. Oh, so that's a solo one. And then I got Circadian Chaos Order, which we've played, Sarah, haven't we? You played Chaos Order.
I
was really wanting to take it home and play it with my brothers, but we didn't have enough time. But I think for my next oath, along with organizing the games into the big boxes, I kind of want to swear by the next time on the show, I will have played one of the expansions to Viscounts of the West Kingdom. So there's Keeper of Keys, or maybe I'll go with the key theme for my oath. And then there's Gates of Gold. And I don't really know what you do with them. I just backed them because they're expansions. Fantastic.
This sounds good.
I kind of answer, but the next time on the show, I will have played through one of the expansions to Viscounts and organized my stuff into the big boxes. What about you two?
Very good.
Very nice. By the way, I was looking up Key to the Kingdom, and the original art, oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's like
a kid
with a mullet, and he's like doing a thumbs up. How good is this?
And what it used to have, right? It's a mullet. They kind of had some plasticky parts that you put in or used, and there was this bridge that you had to put together with these little black steps, and I guarantee you, no one has all the steps anymore. That you would have lost them. Like, no one would have them anymore, because they just, so it was that time where, you know, board
and if you had a complete set, it wouldn't be worth anything.
Yeah. So it was a classic back in the day. Yeah,
that's like Mousetrap, right? Like, if you lost something, it was just, you couldn't do anything.
And you'd forget, get it all out.
You'd set up half of it.
Bloody hell, you know. I've got to put the bloke diving We've lost the diver. It goes in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Or the marble.
The cat ate it.
The cat ate the diver. Mom, the cat ate the diver again. Hang on. You're getting sidetracked here. Because I know. I think you guys have something to fess up to.
We absolutely have a fail, but it's not our fault that we have a fail. It's not our fault, is it, Def?
We were willing, we were able.
Yeah.
We failed nonetheless.
We still failed, and it's Dan's fault. Or is it Dan's fault? Is it Ian O'Toole's fault?
It's Ian O'Toole's
fault.
Yeah, he listened to the show, right? I thought that, you know, he loved us, right? I thought that we were like, you know, I thought he was a fan of us. Like, he's been on the show twice. No. And
he's a fan of Quokkas.
Yeah. He cut our lunch.
Emoji grass.
We were meant to teach Dan on Not Mars. And Ian, he heard the show and he's gone to Dan and he's like, I'll teach you on Mars. And of course, Dan was like, well, I don't want to get taught by Def and Sarah. I want to get taught by Ian O'Toole. Ian O'Toole's way cooler than Def and Sarah. And yeah. And so we now failed that oath because of it.
But hold on.
And there's a rift. There's a rift now.
And by the way, it's not something that we can like postpone or say, yeah, we're going to get to it next week, because it's like, it's done. It's like.
Yeah, it's a real, it's a legit fail.
Reteach? What? That doesn't work.
Dan would be like, oh, yeah, he didn't teach it that well last time. No, he didn't. You explain it way better.
Yeah,
Dan. No, he didn't say that at all. Hey, not many people can say.
That's exactly Dan. He's trying to make everyone feel better.
Not many people can say they've been seagulled by Ian O'Toole. Like, that's a pretty good claim to fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't do my other oath either, which was to play Undaunted North Africa. Well, to progress in Undaunted North Africa with Mitch a bit more, because we agreed that we need to finish that campaign before Undaunted Stalingrad is released, right?
Right.
And we've done Undaunted Normandy, which was great, but we haven't done North Africa all the way through. We've only played a couple of missions, but we haven't managed to play that yet. So that's still outstanding. I will add that I played Marvel Champions last night, but I want to add that I will play it a few times solo to make better sense of it, I guess. So I will add that, but Undaunted North Africa still pending.
I didn't find Marvel Champions that easy to learn. I struggled with that one.
Did you play it straight out of the box?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, okay.
How else would I have played it?
No, but I didn't know if someone had taught it to you or if like.
Someone threw the cards on the floor.
52 pickup.
Pick them up. Yeah. No, I did. I played it straight out of the box as the decks came, and I just found the rule book was a little bit confusing. I was like, oh, I don't know the flow. I don't know the flow of this game. What's going on? How does the bad guy work? I don't really get it.
Oh, maybe you just need an expert. Maybe it's just another problem.
Maybe I just can't learn games.
Maybe you need Ian O'Toole to teach him.
I was about to say that.
He's never offered to teach me anything. Anyway, no, I don't want to create a rift. I actually was kind of relieved. I don't know about you, Dev. Like, we don't have to teach Dan on Mars. It's not exactly It's not exactly a short teach.
Yeah, it's not six nimmed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a long teach. I remember the first time we played it together, Connor. I think it was me, you, and Adrian played it online. And like, it was like this Sunday, start at like 9 a.m., finish at like 3 p.m. Yeah. Everybody was
really?
bloody exhausted at the end. But I think we still had fun then.
And that's,
I love the game. Like, I love the game. I never get tired of teaching it.
And that's when, like, I first found out how, like, impulsive Adrian can be. I love this game. I need to get this game. Next thing I know, he's ordered it from somewhere. I'm like, whoa, I didn't like it that much. Like, it was pretty good, but he was just like,
Adrian doesn't need a – yeah, he doesn't need a purchase pen at all, because it never gets written down. It just gets bought straight away. okay, so, yeah, so I failed my oath, obviously, and my new oath – is to play a full game of Burn Cycle, because we actually only got to like floor 3, Carrie and I. So I want to play
awesome
a full thing. I might just do it solo. Yeah, I'm going to go with like oaths that I can do solo just in case, so that no one can swoop in. I'm kidding. It's fine. But yeah, so that's my new oath. I, Sarah Green, swear to play a full game of Burn Cycle by the next time I'm on the pod. Okay, so the next question of the pod, as I said when I was explaining Clinic, this got me thinking, right, about because I won Clinic the first time I played it, whether that had any bearing on whether I liked the game or not. So my question is, are you more likely to love a game if you win it the first time you play it?
Mm.
For me, I think not. I actually questioned, why did I win Clinic the first time I played it?
You let me cheat, yeah.
Yeah, what happened? Did I? Yeah, maybe I accidentally cheated. I don't know. But I guess because I'm sort of drawn to games for a challenge, I think I'm probably more likely to really love a game if I get beaten up by the game, which is, I don't know if that's weird or not, or if that's like, is that a usual thing, or is it most gamers like are going to love a game if they win it because you get that buzz, you get that like, oh, that was great. I don't know. What about you guys?
No, I'd probably be similar, especially, I guess, like yourself and Def. If I play a lot of games solo and I beat it the first time, I'm like, oh, well, I'm not playing it against anyone else. I'm just playing it for me and I've already beaten it. So what's next? And some games are okay.
But what if it's not solo? What if you beat like three other people? Oh, well, then I get like, is there like a subconscious like, ooh, you know, that was good.
Well, it automatically becomes the best game ever, making me the best board gamer ever because I just beat the four other people playing the game. No, yeah, that's a good point though. Like I think about, well, we played a game of Marco Polo all together. And I think I won that game, not to rub it in, but I won that game. And I'm a bit like, you know, if someone was to say to me, would you like to play it again? Yeah, I would, but it's by no means the top of my, like at the top of my list of, oh, this game is awesome. So, no, it is something to think about, but you do sort of kind of go, oh, well, that was a pretty good game. You get a bit of a head wobble going on, you know.
Yeah.
Well, my first time playing it and I just smashed everyone. So, yeah. But good, it's a good question. I like that question. Good thinking.
What about
you? I think it's, I don't know. Like, I will go back to Connor's comment about the solo games that you want the challenge and you want to sort of feel a satisfaction that you've achieved something when you beat the game. When you play with other people, I think for me, it's a bit similar to that. But I think in some cases, I've even caught myself feeling bad when I win in some games with some, you know, with a big difference. If that happens, I actually feel bad about the outcome of the game because I'm starting to think, well, maybe the other players didn't enjoy that. And it's not like I'm some kind of expert in the games, but it happens, right? In any games, it can happen, especially if there's like, you know, some heavy complex game and some people are playing it for the first time. But so I actually think it's the opposite for me. I actually think I enjoy sort of the experience more than, you know, the outcome of the game. And because I like teaching games so much, I want people that play the game to do well. So I think for me it's also probably not and no to the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I just wonder whether there's like some kind of like, okay, there's been a few times where I've like played a game for the first time and then I've been like really, you know, happy about it and I'll be like, this game is awesome. And then people have been like, did you win? You know, like it's a thing that people ask, like, I bet you won and that's why you like it. And it's no, I don't think that's the reason. In this case, maybe I did, but I don't think that's the reason.
But do you not think that because you're enjoying it, you're actually playing it better? Because you're invested in it, and it's more a case of because I've really enjoyed it, because I've understood it, and because it's made a connection with me, I've actually played a good game because I'm getting enjoyment out of it, and I want to get the most out of this game, as opposed to it being the other way where you play it, you win, and you go, well, I won, so I've had a good time. It's actually the reverse. I'm having a good time, thus I'm actually playing really well.
It's like the secret.
Yeah.
Putting out the positive. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're making it happen.
Push out the hate, bring in the love. Yeah.
I think it's both. Like it can be both. I remember very, like a very good example. We played that route. I think it was 5-player game at the retreat a couple of years ago, Connor, and you were on that game. I think it was Adrian and Mike and
Jules. I think
Jules. Yeah. I think. And like, I think I came by far last in that game, which, to be honest, happens a lot in Root. But I remember having so much fun in that game because
I was involved in the game as a whole, not just as in what I was doing, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And because of, I mean, that game helps because there's a lot of interaction between players, so you kind of get invested in that. So I think it can vary from game to game as well. I remember having some games where I had frustration at the end, not because I lost the game, but because it felt I couldn't do something to improve it. Like it felt hamstrung, and it can happen with some of these tight games that we play, right? But not specifically because you won, or, you know, you feel happier, or if you lost, you might not play the game, or, you know. I think most of the gamers would sort of identify with a lot of this stuff, and I don't think there's a right answer. I think it's like it can go either way, right? I bet if I asked my daughter, for instance, you know, would she be keen to play a game of Eon's End again if the first time we had lost very, very early. She wants to win, right? She's not a competitive person, but in the game she wants to win.
Yeah.
So I bet that for her it would make a difference.
Right, because she'd be like, no, let's do it again and I want to win this time. Like, she's got that drive to win it the next time. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I think that she would be disappointed. Like, we've lost a couple of games. She seemed disappointed rather than driven.
Yeah, I think for kids it's different, right? Like, it's a lot harder to deal with.
Yeah, but that's just when you're a kid. A different example, right? So in those games I would want to win because I would want to keep that experience going, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of factors too. Like, it depends on, you know, like if you've made some critical mistakes early on in the game, it can be, you know, you can be kicking yourself the whole time.
Yeah. Or whatever. And if that game then goes on to last for a while, it's like you keep dwelling on that and you're like, oh, whereas if you play a game and you have a really cool last turn, that might suck you back in, be like, I'm going to have that cool last turn earlier now because I understand the game. And I've talked about it a few times, but I always, my first game, I almost want to get through it quickly because I've sort of learned so much in the first couple of turns that I know I would never play it that same way as I played those first two turns. I would be totally different and implement that. So, yeah, no, it is a really interesting, it's a good, I hope it'll garner some interest on our Facebook and Discord pages.
I'm looking forward to hearing from you guys what you have to say. So we will definitely be posting that question. Are you more likely to love a game if you win it the first time? So that is the end of our show for episode 202. I want to say thank you to our sponsors, Advent Games, and also our Patreons. Thank you so much for supporting us. You guys have no idea how much it helps. Like, you literally are the reason why we're still able to run the show. It's a really big deal to us. And and we are enjoying putting out Patreon content. We love talking to you guys in our Discord as well. So thank you so much for doing that and contributing. All right. Thank you all very much. I hope your next game is a sizzling one. Connor, Def, thank you for coming on the show.
No, always a pleasure. You. Always a pleasure seeing both of you.
You too. See you guys.
See you.
Cheers.
Yeah, I was about to say, was it we were both meant to teach Dan on Mars?
Yeah, and then Ian O'Toole stepped in and ruined it.
Oh, what a joke. Yeah. You need to mention that. You both need to mention that. Call him out. And be like, what's Ian ever done for our community?
Look, I'm sizzling your favorite game, Durf. Yeah.